In the sacred presence of the one who said he would abide in his teaching, be our guide. May we follow his glorious example and tread the unfaltering steps his noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment.
All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
So, Fumio is not here right now. I know you're here. Okay.
He may show up. He's going to talk about what the paper is going to be. So he's kind of going to end up being the point person for this class in lieu of Kyogen. And, we kind of redivided up some of the who's doing what class, but questions about the series as a whole, send to Fumio. And so tonight, this is a two-part class. I'm kind of finishing off the harmony of the sameness, and then Daijo is introducing the design on the precious mirror samadhi and five drinks go into that. And then next week, Daijo and Bukai will continue on that topic. So one of the things we had asked last class was that you take a look at this and bring some questions, comments, insights, anything that percolated up in the last couple of weeks from this sutra. Yeah.
I just thought that perhaps it would have been better to capitalize the way. Because I presume it's really in reference to the way.
Sure.
Yeah. Not like a, I don't know, the grammar.
Right.
It kind of shifts it when I capitalize it, mm-hmm. or think of it in terms of that. Dallas.
My sense is that probably how it read it at the time was that that was really obvious that that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really capitalize the kanji. So my guess is it's pretty purely a translation issue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was written for a culture and a time period where that was quite obvious. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Bring on.
At the last class, Kyogen had made a reference to the Wisdom Sutras.
Right.
And so I kind of went back and was looking at this in light of that, and that just really has popped out at me.
Mm.
The Lien Zhi,
mm-hmm.
that has come to the surface for me, not only in this, but just all day long, the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So people are familiar with the manager, this me being the absolute, the unconditioned emptiness, her being the phenomenal relative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so one of the things that this definitely draws on the Wisdom Sutras in that basic distinction. And I think what this adds is so you've got this potential dichotomy here. Like, what do you do with that? How do you resolve that? What's the dissolution of that? And it's not from anything added to it. It's not an additional piece. It's just looking at the relationship between the two and letting them both be true, letting them both be there.
Well, and as I was looking at that, I flashed on something that I am saying all the time when I'm giving tours at the garden,
uh-huh.
and the interdependency of the shore and mm-hmm. the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went, oh, well. Above, below, they're both there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're both there, and I think the fun part about that, like in terms of like, you know, taking this from, oh, okay, like, yeah, that makes sense and I agree with that, which, you know, we can all do pretty straightforwardly. But then, you know, making that route from like when you're in the water and you're looking at the shore, like being able to know both at that point, and when you're on the shore and like looking at the water, you know, when you're really thoroughly in one position or the other, you know, where you're the momentum, your karmic response, like everything is kind of gearing you to see it one way, to see this opposition, to take that, to wear that path down so that it's easy to step into that harmonious position between the two. Just getting really familiar with, oh, like that's how I know I'm wasting half of it. That's how I know I'm caught.
That's not making sense to me. I'm not comprehending this dichotomy between the absolute and the relative. To me, it always seems to be between the relative and the relative. I don't know what the absolute is. It's...
Great. I don't see that as a problem.
I don't either.
Yeah. I'd rather you, like, not have any idea of what that is and be clear about that than to think you have an idea and like set that up as, oh, that's it, you know, because then, you know.
Well, I do have ideas, I don't know.
But you're clear that they're ideas, yes.
Since I kind of butted in already, I read Suzuki's
book. Sure. Streams.
Yeah, and this is the thing that confused me the most is in the paragraph of eye and sight, ear and sound, nose and smell, tongue and taste, thus each and everything depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth, trunk and branches share the essence, revered and common speech, each has its speech. So it's talking about the interdependence of things and there can't be an eye without sight, or sight without eyes, and so forth. But Suzuki also brings in, starts talking about the precepts with that. And he starts talking about, he talks about killing an insect. And he says, even when you kill the insects, knowing that when we kill it, or something along this nature, we still kept the precepts.
Oh,
and
right,
that is like, it's like, okay, I'm missing a big subtle point here.
Right.
Explain?
Yeah, so, you know, being able to... navigate different horizons at the same time. So, in a very broad perspective, when you're looking far away, like, you know, like you're not separate from that fly, that whatever you just squished, right? I met your spider, by the way.
You did.
I'm impressed. Anyway,
impressed that I lasted so long.
Impressed by its size.
Yes.
So, you know, to be able to get that, to feel that non-differentiation between you and the fly. So, you know, there may be something that's squished and something that's not squished, but there's not, like, you can't touch that. You can't wedge separation into it in that view. Like, it's you know, it's there. So that's an aspect of it, right? That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's part of how we experience the world at certain times. And it's also true that, like, you know, you take the next breath, the fly doesn't. You know, it decomposes.
Right.
And, you know, we have to give credit to that too.
Exactly, well, kind of related to that, and I think related to what you're saying. You know, the contradictions in here about in the light there's darkness, but don't take it that way. Mm-hmm. Or in the darkness there's light. As long as you try and think your way through this, you will never get to it. And so, like, part of really understanding this is dropping concepts that we love to put on things, because that will always be in your way.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes, and like, you know, we're surrounded by words and phrases. You know, like, this is a cool one. Like, I have to stand up here and, you know, and use you because we have this thing called the seminary program. So, you know, there's a cool one. Like, both are true. Yes. Both, like, are part of experience and that kind of bowing of, oh, in this moment, this counts. And so, you know, like, when it's time to pick up a hammer, you pick up the hammer, you know, you talk about it, let's see if we can get some intellectual clarity. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that translates into meditation in some way. There's some ricochet in there where like something trickles down into like a real lived experience of it. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa.
And as you say, holding both, holding the thoughts and holding the experience without waking up the thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's light and dark opposing one another, and then there's function and place. Right. And I'm wondering if you could give me an example of both the relative and the absolute doing something. Like, does that make sense?
Oh, function and place. Okay.
So, yeah. You could use, I guess, the example of the wolf and the donkey.
Excuse me?
I mean, I guess you could use the example of the well and the donkey. Kyogen sometimes describes the absolute as the well looking at the donkey.
Oh, okay. I'm looking for this in here. How far down is it?
Wait, what are you looking for?
Are you pulling function and...
Oh.
Two-thirds, three-quarters.
One of the bells.
Oh, function and place. Each of the myriad things has its merit expressed according to
function and place.
Right.
That's right after there's another action phrase just before it, which is light and dark opposing one another, like the fact that there's action and there's walking.
And so you're saying that, this is what I'm confused about. Are you saying that function is the and place is sure? Or
I'm not saying anything. I'm asking if. Could you give me an example? Because I'm having a hard time understanding the doing of
yes,
principle or absolute.
Okay.
And it might help me to have an example of both.
So the doing absolute. Of absolute is seeing unity. You know, that's what it does. Because it experiences broadly. Without discrimination.
So is it just experiencing? Or is it just maybe like only experiencing?
I would say that when you go beyond experiencing, the balance shifts. So there may be aspects of, you know, in your momentary experience, we're talking like, you know, small moments of time, that like the absolute, like there's aspects of that there. But if you're going beyond experience, you're more relative. You know, once you're speaking, thinking, doing, that's activity, and that can be unconditioned in a way. It can be you know, like not karmically doesn't have to be the kind of clunking out of karma, but so it can, you know, that's described as, you know, unconditioned action or something like spontaneous activity, but it's
It's something different. It's different from that pure experience thereof.
I mean, it's saying that everything has merit, and in to me, in its function and in where it's located. When you see the rabbit, right, and when you see the fox, which one doesn't have merit?
Sure.
They both have merit, mm-hmm. And it's bad news for the rabbit. It's bad news for the fox when the rabbit runs away. Mm-hmm. But they both have merit. Mm-hmm. What doesn't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I take great solace in the phrase, progress is not a matter of far or near.
Mm-hmm. That was real pleasantly for me. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. Even progress? You're going to rip that away?
Yeah. The perfect example.
It's radical to think that way.
Yeah.
It's also very comforting in a way.
Yeah, not letting us get ahead of ourselves. And you know, just, what is the next step? Front and back foot.
Various translations of that are walking forward is not a matter of far or near. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one other translation I have is walking the way, we're never far or near from it.
Rishi kind of has, as you walk on, distinctions between near and far are lost.
It's just a tendency to kind of measure ourselves and am I there yet and how far have I come? I'm tired, am I closer? And all of that judging.
Yeah, and that's a lot of that is Sekito's like the core teaching of the way is that which is right in front of you, like this. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to deal with. That's what you have. That's all it is. And it's so you know, there's so many sensory metaphors in this, mm-hmm. You know, tactile things. They're referring to that.
Sounds an awful lot like going on beyond, always going on beyond, mm-hmm. Always becoming Buddha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's interesting how they go to the same place, right? It's saying the same thing, but such a different way of getting there, of taking us there. I mean, just if I'm mindful to hear both of those, the sensation is different, mm-hmm. Which I find interesting.
Mm-hmm. How's it different?
Well, it's going on beyond. It's like hearing a bell that's just that it'll just always it continues and continues. Mm-hmm. And so there's this it's an expansive way of meeting that. This can't ever be finished. There's always work to do. There's always something more, and that's quiet. That's really peaceful. Whereas Sekito is more
right here.
He was the only thing.
Right here.
Right. It's not that kind of expansive, disappearing. It's full
right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just my little.
Actually, I kind of hear this. I hear this, uh-huh. Or practice it as dropping all the normal constraints that I, or all the extra stuff I add on to awareness, mm-hmm. That as the awareness becomes lighter and purer, mm-hmm. There is an expansiveness of, mm-hmm. And it's been really interesting to me to practice with holding the concepts, but also letting go of the concepts and seeing, I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a contradiction to you? What you just said about it's right here, or it's always more, it's always greater.
No, because it's the same. It's like doing like koan work in a way. Like you may be dealing with the same truth, but if like the same like insight, but different koans like come at it from different directions. And if you're coming at it from this direction like that, that's not going to work. It doesn't fit that koan. And so, that's kind of, like, they're two different experiences, like that two different ways of seeing the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that like, yeah, you know, just seeing the same thing.
So my sense of kind of what we're trying to describe here is that within this particular way of perceiving this truth is very embodied, is what it feels like to me. It's very, there's lots of sensual images, as you mentioned. It's very, it has a sort of empty, concrete kind of feel to it. I really resonate with more than I do the Gate Gate, which feels very disembodied, not really like that way. Yeah. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's a cultural thing, do you think?
That's how I understand it. I mean, I'm not a scholar of Chinese literature, but in studying this, like that's that's what I hear. And you look at other Chinese poetry, like it tends to be very it's human scaled. It's like it's from these eyes. It's,
And then after all this kind of rigmarole, we end with this very compelling, very urgent, very timely, don't waste time, get on with it. And that's how it ends. Which really strikes me.
Yeah, I think that's the point there. And it's people are familiar with the grass roof hermitage. The other, major poem I say, I believe the last line in there is, do not separate from the skin bag here and now, which is the very same thing. Like end on that, like boom.
I read it, there is definitely, I agree with that interpretation. But along the lines of my taking a more historical approach, you should capitalize it. Another way I read it in a more historical context was, so he's embracing the way as in like Taoism, incorporating that, right? Because that is what some people were familiar with. And I also felt like in terms of studying the mystery, some groups of people were only studying like scriptures. Like there was a movement of people who just study scripture or like that. And there's nothing wrong with it, but for him, to me, there's also kind of a call or a, not a criticism, but just a drop the scriptures and the books and the using the mind to investigate and then instead embody the investigation. That's my imagination.
Yeah.
bringing that historical, I kind of see it as there's the Northern School and the Southern School, and at least the impression we get have of the Northern School that there were more in the understanding and the intellectual aspect of it. And I call him Shidu. I mean, there's a sense here that he's making peace between, he's trying to harmonize mm-hmm. The Northern and the Southern, that they're not separate.
Yeah.
And
there's a whole series of phrases in here about, you know, don't differentiate between these different teachings.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And Suzuki pretty much mm-hmm. says that if we're both doing the same thing, it's just mm-hmm. different emphasis, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's part of the purpose with this. And have a little bit of a commentary. But I think, in terms of Thomas's comment about the last line, I think in terms of we're not chanting it because of the commentary, right? Like it didn't get to be the one of the things that's recited every day in every sutta in monastery, like. Because of some dispute, 800 years ago, however many. But it's, it carries. It has a force to it with that. Opens things up, and I think that's part of what's interesting about reading this. Over decades is that. How a line like that ends, do not spend your days and nights in vain, how you hear that the first couple of years of practice is going to be different from how you hear that, 30 years from now. And that is fascinating because it's just this continual meditation of who am I? It's a mirror right there. It's really we really build up a relationship with these through that just blatant repetition mm-hmm. and continuing to have this sense of self that interaction
mm-hmm.
yeah
even though the concept of the Northern and the Southern doesn't make sense to us anymore
mm-hmm.
we just turn on the news.
Yeah, true.
There's conflict. Mm-hmm. So I think it's still, even though it's the beginning mm-hmm. portion of it, it's mm-hmm. it's still a call to harmonizing with the different forces within society, within, look for the unity, and then don't goof off at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're practicing this, if you're trying to incorporate that sense of harmony, that sense of being able to balance, that broad perspective is there somewhere, and it's just an asterisk on all the all the views, all the stuff, all the taking sides and having camps and whatever. That's not the whole truth. Whether I'm in it or not, that's an aspect. And hopefully that allows a grace, a kind of evenness with it, rather than getting caught. Yeah.
Thomas, I remember you saying way back in the day that when you first started coming here, you were creeped out that we weren't supposed to think about the sutras, we were just supposed to let them.
Brainwashes.
Wash through.
I just thought it was just cultish nutty.
But I think, Kathy, so what you were saying is that there's a deeper truth here that's beyond the words. Mm-hmm. And the longer mm-hmm. you steep in that,
mm-hmm.
the more it's sort of
the yeah, absolute relative harmony. It's mm-hmm. You've got the words, you've got the self, you've got the relation between the two. That's where the juice is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the night of one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lines grasping at things is surely delusion, according to sameness, is still not enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Just those stand out to me as, you know, okay, this is how you practice with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's, you know, that basic pattern of A and not A, you know, and then so how do you resolve that? Like, is repeated throughout it. And yeah, you know, both are there.
Another reading of the last two lines from another translation says, I implore those who investigate the mysterious, do not waste your time. Mm-hmm. So that really gets at the notion that studying the absolute or attempting to study the absolute is a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Chasing words and phrases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it bothers me. When are we not studying?
It's a paradox.
Like, even if we aren't being shravakas in hearing the words, mm-hmm. as it says, like, everybody is constantly studying the mystery because we're embodied. And, I mean, as it's like, what is this? All the objects of the senses interacting, yet do not. Interacting brings involvement, otherwise each keeps its place. And then it goes on with fire heats, wind moves, water wets, earth is solid. So earth is constantly providing us some solidness. Mm-hmm. The wind is providing, you know, it's everything is moving and it's all flowing into us and we're constantly mm-hmm. receiving. Mm-hmm. So how can we not be studying?
Well, so it's similar to, like, how could we possibly spend a day or night in vain? Right, like, so both are supposed to be talking about you can spend the next day where you're going to spend the next day. That's probably in vain. So yes, like, right, like, we're constantly studying, like, it's we're always in relationship to the world, we're always being affected by it and dancing with it, and, you know, like, sometimes that's a benefit and sometimes not. Sometimes, like, we're really absorbing it and sometimes we're not.
Mm-hmm. So then, what would be an example of wasted time?
I think that depends on your experience. I think, but you know, notice how the whole room laughed right there?
Yeah.
I think we recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the last thing I want to do is like wasted time, good time.
That would be a waste of
time. But you know, like, if there's a quiet, if there's a spaciousness in life, then we recognize it. It's really here. We don't, you know, we get skittish when we recognize it. We do things to distract and mask and explain and whatever, but, like, really, like, if we're willing to see it, then we do. And that's, you don't have to explain it, you don't have to justify it, it's just, oh, okay, like, noted.
Yeah. Tisha, that makes me say, a couple of weeks ago I was traveling, and to me, that's one of the circles of hell because of, like, talk about wasted time, right? TVs everywhere you go.
Oh, I was thinking of, like, being there 2 hours early for the plane just to wait.
No, but, like, the noise, the distraction, everything is designed to distract your attention from what's happening.
Waiting.
Which doesn't mean you will be, but to me, that is, like, engineered to pass your time in vain. Mm-hmm. And a lot, you know, you see people just tuned out and numbed out and checked out. And that's when you said, what is an example of
wasting time?
Or like a basement in vain. It's like, that's engineered for that.
Distraction.
Yeah.
So I made a bunch of notes, but I think that we've, just by kind of questioning, we've hit a lot of it. Any questions on the, like, what is that referring to? And there's a lot of like little things in here, but it's, you know, like interacting, being involved in, like, as a reference to the Abhidhamma, things like that.
What's a mountain and what's a river in this?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've done Armando on that, but as far as like what the, like, from an academic perspective, I don't have any idea. You could make an argument that, you know, one is far more emptiness. I don't have any idea how that would go in, you know, 7th century China.
Yeah. Okay. Just a, somewhere in here it uses, the grasping at things is surely delusion. Is it accident that they use the word surely? Because, I mean, to me that sounds like sure and Lee. But it's also the spot where in the Chinese the words that are used there also use the sounds of sure and li. And has anybody else noticed that? Is that done on purpose, or is that just
inside Chinese jokes?
Yeah.
Maybe that's I'm the only one.
Jiu kind of has a, if you're born, we clutch at things and then compound delusion later on by following ideals.
They chose to be here.
You know, Kakumi, one of the things that I find very seductive about the time with Taoism, and one of the reasons I am cautious about Taoism, is there's something really delicious about some ultimate unchanging source that we can finally rest in, right? That there's something permanent, finally, in this vexing practice where, you know, the rug is constantly pulled up. And so finally, we have the true source that does not change, that is always there, that we can rest in. And so, I just wonder if you have any, I think that's a perilous path, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think people found that to be really effective. That's my sense of it, is that, like, you know, early Buddhism, like, there's not a whole lot of mention of that kind of a concept. Like, it doesn't fit in. And gradually, like, Buddha nature became a thing. And then what's the difference? Like, so there was a, you know, kind of, even before it got to China, like, that was a controversy and a difference in how it was taught in different places or to different people. And, you know, the meaning that I make of that is that that's useful. You know, there's something that proved to be helpful about seeing it like that for some people. And, you know, hold it lightly. Like, it's a translation, you know. Sure, it'll be. Like, maybe there's something there. And, I find it useful. I find that something that, yeah, you know, I can feel a little bit of that kind of attraction too, like, but I think more often it's kind of an inspiration it's a comfort, you know, also, and so, yeah, that's helpful at times.
Also kind of distracting.
Uh-huh. Well, I think, you know, like, stay tuned to, like, who you are. And it's, you know, we have such a such a breadth of voices to listen to in, you know, several thousand years of Buddhism. I mean, it's, there's so many different kinds of teachings, flavors of teachings. And, you know, we're in a funny time and place because we have access to a lot of it. So, you know, we have to really stay connected to, like, oh, like, well, how is it affecting me? Like, how am I pushed and pulled here? Maybe that's not, you know, maybe that was useful last month and not so much right now. Be able to pivot.
Is the phrase you're referring to on that, the true source shines clear in the light?
Yeah, so isn't that delicious?
It is.
It's an
illusion.
At the same time.
Kagmyo, could you go back to one thing you said a little while ago and expand on it a little bit? Because it sort of brings a different light to it than I was hoping. Interacting brings involvement. You said that refers to the Abhidharma. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So all the objects of the senses interact with the Abhidharma, interact and brings involvement. Otherwise, each piece of the place. So, perception is talked about, like the process of perception is talked about in great length in the Abhidharma, like how that actually happens, what that means. So you've got mind objects, you've got sense objects, like how do they, and then you've got, what's the third?
Sense gates,
thank you. Right, and so how do those, so there's an interaction, and out of that, perception happens. So, yes, that happens. You also have the hard sutra, no, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the phenomenon, you've got the absolute, right?
Really? Okay, yeah. That makes more sense.
What'd you say?
So much for Shirley.
So stop calling me Shirley.
Just one thing, don't call me Shirley.
Alright.
Could I just ask you about one phrase here? Phenomena exist, Basa lifted, principal response, arrow points me. So I've thought that refers to the meeting of Shir and me, like this kind of impossible meeting.
Well, yeah, that's my sense. I mean, so you've got, phenomena exist. So you've got this ground of sure happening and bubbling and squishing and doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the principle responding to that. So there is this, like, you know, darkness to that interaction. The impossibility of like describing that, you know, other than actually just doing it. Yeah, arrow points meeting. I don't know. That resonates. Mm-hmm.
Do you have another thought on it?
Let's see. Mm-hmm. You know, the sense that I have there is that it's there's a simplicity and a matter-of-factness about it. You know, it's like phenomena exist, semicolon, box and lid fit, semicolon, principle response, semicolon, arrow points to me. Like each at its time turning, meeting what's in front of you, like shifting perspective, like letting it each happen. You don't have to have this overarching story and narrative that like connects it all together. It's discrete, you know, bubbling mass, darkness. Like, each is health, each is complete, each is thorough. And that when you take away that self which like threads it all together, then there's an ease to it, there's a simplicity to it. It's immediate, it's simple, it's just that. That's
yeah.
You know. You ask me next week and I'll tell you something different. That's okay. So I look tonight, and that's what I find, right? And that's the impression I get. That's going to condition future impressions, now that I said it out loud. All right, thank you. Is that?
Oh.
Hi. So the purpose of me standing right here is that we have about half an hour talking about five ranks in preparation for the next class, in which Rukai and I assist Rukai to go through the actual lines in Krishna's Mani. So that's kind of my job here, but listening to not last week, but 2 weeks ago, the first class recording, a lot of like historical stuff actually covered. So I'm not gonna spend too much time. I just want to kind of jog your memory about it, There's this Nagarjuna and this Heart Sutra. Kami also talked about it today too. And there's Guiyan and there's Sandokai, which we just talked about. And all of them actually kind of talk about similar thing, like polarity between, like you can see in this table that Nagarjuna had this ultimate truth and conventional truth. And Heart Sutra had this emptiness and form, and then Guiyan had principle and phenomenon. And Sandokai is, sameness, difference, and also it says darkness and light, kind of the same thing. And then Five Ranks and Hokyo Zanmai, they introduced this, in English it's real and apparent. And so again, but it's, if you really listen to it's kind of dialectic discussion of it, I think it's pretty similar. Although they are not exactly the same and there are different flavors. But in terms of treating, when we talk about difference and sameness in Sandokai, and it's really helpful, and if there's a difference between that and preciousness samadhi, is that it's actually this five ranks. Because Sandokai and Heart Sutra, it's more or less, there is some interaction, but it's more or less static. There's this sameness and here's this difference. And it talks about, you know, kind of mixing them up, but it's not quite like a process. And that's where, you know, 5 grams is no different in terms of it gives you a process, it puts that in sequence. And actually, if you look at the kind of little lower than the middle, so in the Sandhu guide, that's all those things, you know, grasping a thing, situation, individual, and according to sense, they're not enlightened. And there's a Kyogen, this is Kyogen's world, and the Sutra and Sandokai, you know, also harmonize the two meaning those varieties, but they are more or less static. And Hokyo Zanmai, which is precious samadhi, he puts that in sequence. So, just like I said, so that's kind of a significance of 5 ranks in most like, simplest way. Is that it will give you that, a little more of context, a little more of kind of, you know, that has to follow. And that is kind of the preparation for actually talking about it. And, yes.
Can you explain more or re-explain putting it in sequence? The other two are static.
It's more or less, for example, if you look at 5 ranks, maybe you should look at it. Well, it's probably you heard some of those like a process of, you know, it's like box cutting pictures. It's kind of a very similar thing. And 5 ranks, basically, there's, you know, Kyogen often talks about bikes, bike riding, you know, bike and a boy, and the boy first, boy is like, bike is just not really paying attention to that, it's playing with it, and not very important. And suddenly, then there's, you know, desire arises in the boy to, oh, I can actually ride this thing, and then it's to the next step of, you know, practice. And then you practice, and eventually you can ride it. And that's like a whole, you know, bunch of freedom. And then after that, then you use that to go back and forth, you know, between school or whatever. And then after that, you kind of graduate that too. And then, you know, you still use bike sometimes, but it's not really your central tension anymore. So that is, you know, Kyogen's way of explaining, kind of simple way of explaining the process. And the 5 ranks actually, you know, if you look at the 5 ranks itself, it's like much more kind of poetic. And for me, it's like, wow, how does it, you know, mean that? But I like the Kyogen's example. It's like, you can actually read it that way. And it's like, can see it in an ongoing process. So that,
that's helpful. Thank you.
If there's no questions, I'm going to just, go right over to you. Oh, and then we just say 5 ranks, but there are actually like 2 cycles. And I think the more famous one is the cycle of apparent and real. And but there's also the cycle of merit, which I'm hoping to have time to talk about. But those two are, cycle of merit is actually much more like a bike thing. It's like there's definitely, you know, the beginning to the end. And more so than apparent and real. Apparent and real is more of a, you can read it as, you know, procession from the first to the last, but it also emphasizes that, you know, that's actually one in like 5 different modes or something. And if you, you know, next week we'll look at the lines in Precious Mind Samadhi, but there's like the taste of the 5 flavored earth and five from Vajra, the both, you know, one earth actually has all those tastes. And five from Vajra, you know, it is one thing, but it, you know, prongs, it has five prongs. So it actually emphasizes the fact that they're not, you can read it as process, but at the same time, don't like get caught in it too much, because it's actually the same thing. So it does not mean that if you are, you know, in the second, you have to go to the third and you have to go to the fourth. Mm-hmm. It's not quite like that. And so that's the little difference, that you know, the apparent or real cycle is more like that. The very cycle is actually, in a way, it's more easy to understand, because it's more sequential. Also, I'm not sure if I have time to do that, but at the end, Kyogen actually said he really likes this, somebody called Nukarias, this Japanese guy's commentary on the cycle of merit. And didn't put it down there, but I can read it, and you can read them pretty easily, because there's a website you can go to. Actually, you can actually download the whole book he wrote. And this, his commentary is on like page 122, so it's like big book. But you know, his commentary is something that Kyogen said that's close to what he was taught in Chasa, and also close to when transmitted people get like a transmission document, what they call them. It's that also talks about that kind of stuff too, and it's close to that too. So hopefully we can get to that. Let's see. Yeah, went through that. And the second page, we just look at paragraphs for apparent and real. And here, I actually decided not to put the points here. It feels like it might be, if we have those 5 points here, we'll be staring at it for at least 30 minutes. So, like I get mesmerized too. So. I might read that poem, but for now, just kind of go through it in a kind of simple way. You know, first, the apparent within the real. And the way I put it is that so you can see that there are three lines under each step or whatever. And at the bottom, you can see that A is actually lines in the precious mere samadhi that kind of represents that particular step. And B is somebody called William F. Powell, who is a translator of five ranks and stuff. He put really simple commentary, so I thought it was good. So I put that. And then C is from a fourfold Dhamma Dhatu. So there's a fourfold Dhamma Dhatu, which is not unlike five ranks, but it precedes that, because it's a product of Avatamsaka Sutra and Huyen thought. But it's like a great uncle, Krishna Samadhi, I guess. So I put that too, to just show the relationship. This is pretty short, so I can just read through and you can think about it. So one is the apparent within the real. In the precious mirror, it's in darkest night, it's perfectly clear. And in the commentary, Powell's commentary, it's form is emptiness, experience how all things are empty. And in Dhamma Dhatu, it's a realm of individual phenomena. And then the second one is the real within the apparent. And the precious mirror, it's in the light of dawn, it is hidden. And Paulo's commentary is, emptiness is form, truth of emptiness manifests in phenomenal events. In the, so Dharmata too is a realm of individual phenomena. So it's actually both a realm of individual phenomena, the first two of the five ranks, in terms of correspondence. Now this, you know, this correspondence is based on something that material that Kyogen gave me. I think they used this same thing in the past classes too. So it's like tables after tables of different translations of five ranks and different commentaries on each rank, and just pretty interesting. I have what I got from him was just excerpt, and even that has like only about 10 different tables. Really small.
Wow. Jeez.
So not gonna, you know, I'm all kind of afraid of even touching it here. So. Anyway, so that's where it comes from, and actually I was going to ask Kakumio really where it actually came from. It's a compilation of, it looks like he said, well, basically somebody who just kind of like a vacuum cleaner, it's just fucked all of the verses, commentaries and translations of five ranks, and it's just kind of put there. So it doesn't have any kind of rhyme and reasons, really.
Will you send it to us, Sergio?
I think I'm going to look for original files or something.
I'm just curious to see what's in there. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, actually, you might enjoy it. It's it's not a commentary on you or anything. Reality, okay. So coming from within the real, and that's the third one. So this is one that usually is shown as kind of like a, in the middle, kind of shiny moon thing. And reality constantly flows. That's what he said there from Kashmir and Paul's commentaries. A focus on the real, absorption in emptiness as in meditation. I'm not sure that that's, you know, what he's saying is so like accurate or anything, but it's, at least for me, easy to understand, so I just put them there. And in terms of Dharmata too, it's a realm of one principle. So it's like a verbal principle. Then go on to the four, arriving in the apparent. That's in the precious mirror, like ministers of the laws, children of their parents. So you're going back to the world of, you know, phenomena. And Pablo's commentary, emptiness is not different from form. Things are experienced as identical to emptiness. Okay. And in terms of Dharmata too, it's a realm of non-obstruction principle and phenomena. And then the fifth one is, you know, unity attained. The precious mirror is just visited continuously, it's called host within host, or it's called do, sorry. And commentary from Paulo is, neither form nor emptiness is emphasized. Realization transcending the first four. So basically, transcending the first four, but also inclusive. The realm of non-obstruction between phenomena. It's a Dharmata to say. So, that's...
Did you just say it's a Dharmadhatu thing?
It's a divinity.
That's fun.
All right. Yeah, I think if you can use that tomorrow.
So how does just to do this continuously is called the host within the host? How does that convey the non-obstruction of different phenomena, that different
between phenomena. You know, to me, actually the four and five are sometimes hard to distinguish between to me. Because the four is basically in terms of like bike. You know, you are using bike in the real world, so you're not totally so obsessed with bike anymore, you're just using it. And five is in Kyogen's story, I mean, it's still kind of like that, except that maybe the focus on the bike is gone. It's gone. Mm-hmm. You may still use it. So,
but there the focus now is on the unity between phenomena and the realm in which we exist, really.
Right.
And the question I'm asking is, this doesn't make sense to me. Just to do this continuously is called the host within the host. Those are just words to me. I'm not capturing the fundamental meaning behind it. How does that evoke this?
Because this is like just this. And it's part of the problem is that instead of the lost children obey their parents, not obeying is not failure, service, not hell. And just do this continuously is called host within the host. So I think you probably, I would include the sentence that preceded it, because otherwise it doesn't
make sense.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, in Chinese, children obeying the parents and the ministers or their lords, that's like a just regular world order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of hard to see that from, you know, 21st century United States, but in China back then, it's like an absolute thing that you do. So, you know, going back to that world, that's what really it means, you know, really nothing extra. You just, you know, you serve and you, well, children obey your parents and serve the Lord. So that's the social system of the time. And I think it basically means you go back to that. Nothing extra. You don't add any, you know, spiritual or anything, you just do that, you know, after going through all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what it means.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that sort of okay?
Because so much of the references here are to a very specific period of time and culture that it's like, I have no idea what this means.
Yeah.
It's a host within the host. It's like that little voice is talking in my head. I don't know.
Yeah, to me too, it's like, you know, children obey their parents, like even that is, you know, for most of us, it's like, really not true. But, you know, if you think about it, it's all the time, it's really
that's a wish.
Right. I would love for my children to be like that. Patrick? Yes?
I'm a little bit confused about the five ranks, is that the development of that concurrent with, or more or less concurrent with, Precious Mirror's mind?
You know, I'm not sure. I think, as far as what I read, both of them are attributed to Tozan. But we don't know too much about Tozan's life. And I think both actually, is that true? At least Krishna Samadhi, the first appearance was like, what, 11th century or something, like 200 years later than Tozan. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about the five ranks, but those things are, you know, I think at this point, maybe hard to pinpoint which one was first. And I feel like...
Yeah, but you're talking about a difference of, you know, 50 or 70 years. I mean, they're they're both attributed to Tozan.
But mostly, I don't really know that which precedes which.
I have a question. Is there like a document that says these are the five ranks? Clear. I mean, every time I see something on the five ranks, I see a poem, and from that poem, we're supposed to deduce the five ranks.
It's probably true that the original was Plato's poems. And there's also like a record of, what is that, like a question and answer or something to Tozan. I can go back to this horrible table thing and... but it's actually helpful, so let me find function. Yeah, it's okay. It's like it's called dialogue. It's just called dialogue, but it's in Donshan's record, and it's something like. So for the first one, a monk asked,
it's the poem of the monks.
Yeah, because it's also a little confusing, because this one actually is about the cycle of merit. This one, this particular one. Tozan wrote both, right? Cycle of apparent and real, and cycle of merit. And this question and answer is actually belong to the cycle of merit, so I probably shouldn't even read that right now. But there is a, like, you know, record like that too. So if you go to look at the Sinekan, what is that? Oh, here. Just above those I Ching thing, the figures diagram, there's a website. Mm-hmm. And this has a, you know, lots of translations of Kokyo-sama and also five ranks and related text. Like, probably it will have this question and answer stuff too. It's extensive. And I think it actually have many of the things that are in here too. In these tables.
One thing to throw in there in response to Sorkay's question is that different lineages interpret this differently.
Uh-huh.
So, like the Rinzai version of the five rings is, like, how they divvy it up, like where they draw the different lines is quite different from how we tend to talk about it.
That's right. Yeah.
So you're not going to find a single, here are the delineations. It's really something that's passed down and worked through, and this is considered a really sort of personal and advanced teaching. It's not something that.
Yeah.
You know,
is it in Soto too? Or
yeah.
Just in the.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
okay. If you look in Andy Ferguson's Chinese Heritage, you'll see that this kind of thing crops up on the, I think it's like the 11th generation. Like every school comes up with their own
version.
Iteration. In the Linji school, they just have like the four ranks, and it covers just the Dharma documents.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I mean, like, it's like the person of no rank. It's sort of like the catchphrase. You want to be the person of no rank. Oh,
okay.
And they get as many as 10 for one school. And how do we have just five?
And do they all have a slightly different poem to express it, or is there like a document that says these are the multiple ranks, this is what
my
they mean?
My sense is that the poems are actually fairly consistent, but...
There's a record of it in Dhammalin, History of Buddhism in India and China. It has like a section on the five ranks and also covers the different schools. But
yeah, maybe I should look at that. Poems are fairly like identical, but then, you know, like I don't really have any
food from that. So,
Funny question.
So, a poem with tribal knowledge on the interpretation for.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the table also, that this website that I just mentioned, there's like boom, 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 like at least like 5 or 6 different translations. So even if the original Chinese is the same, there's a translation. And then, officials said there are probably, more of the original Chinese. So I think that's probably why Kyogen, when I talked about this, with Kyogen, he was really emphasizing that he wants us to understand, like our understanding, our lineage understanding of this. Because if you try to understand this old Rinzai and different ways to understand it, because this like precious mirror samadhi and also five ranks, it's just kind of invite you to interpret it. So via spin, it's very good for spinning. So he was really concerned about this kind of spinning thing. So that's why I was interested in this Nukaria. Actually, it's at the bottom of the second page. Nukaria's commentary on five ranks, but it's on five ranks of merit. But but he does it in a. Site. Well, you can see it in this website URL. This religion of the samurai. So it's like a kind of samurai version. But Kyogen said his commentary on the cycle of merit actually really similar to how he learned. So he really likes it. So I think we should probably try to read that. We have like 5 minutes left till 9, so probably I can just kind of give a flavor to it in just a couple minutes. And the commentary is pretty long, so don't wanna read all of that. 1, 2, 3, 4, bottom. Yeah. So I'm just going to read the kind of first portion of the comments on each one. Well, the first one, actually, the cycle of merit, the first thing is turning toward, looking upon or turning toward something, like bike, kids getting interested in bike. And here it says, the first stage is called the rank of turning, in which the student turns his mind from the external object of the sense toward the inner enlightened consciousness. He gives up all mean desires and aspires to spiritual elevation. So it just goes on, but it's kind of you get the sense of that. And the second rank of cycle of merit is serving. So the first one is looking upon, and the second one is serving. And the serving, the second stage is called the rank of service, in which the student distinguishes himself by his loyalty to the mind king. Mind king is like, kind of like, it signifies enlightened mind. And becomes courtier to serve him. He is in constant service to the king, attending him with obedience and love, and always fearing to offend him. So that's the service part. Like in terms of bhakti, you're really struggling to grind all and the process of learning. And the third is called accomplishing. The third stage is called the rank of merit. In which the student distinguishes himself by his meritorious act of conquering over the rebel army of passion, which rises against the mind king. And it also goes on. And the fourth one is accomplishing mutually, which is that the fourth stage is called the rank of cooperative merit, in which the student cooperates with other persons in order to complete his merit. Now, he's not compared with the general who conquers his fall, but with the prime minister who cooperates with other officials to the benefit of the people. So that's the fourth one. And the fifth one is accomplishment of accomplishment, which is kind of, yeah. And that one, the commentary is, the fifth stage is called the rank of merit over merit, which means the rank of meritless merit. This is the rank of the king himself. The king does nothing meritorious, because all the governmental works are done by his ministers and subjects. All that he has to do is to keep his inborn dignity and sit high on his throne. Therefore, his conduct is meritless, but all the meritorious acts of his subjects are done through his authority. So you can get a sense of that.
Sweet.
Right. And, well, you know, you kind of need to look really dignified, I guess. So, this is, but if you are, you know, if you're drawn to this, then you can certainly go to this website and, you know, download the whole book and just go to page 122 if you want to just read the commentaries.
So are you suggesting that the five ranks, or what is the relation of the five ranks to Precious Spirit Samadhi? Is there a relation? Is it supposed to shed some light on it? Does it suggest a structure to it, or is it more or less unrelated?
The five ranks helps. I think it, as I said, you know, there's, I don't know which one came first, but they are obviously related, and to get the sense of some understanding of five ranks really help when you need to understand Precious Mirror Samadhi. Because in Precious Mirror Samadhi, some of the things are, like for example, that the part that I recited, like the taste of the five flavors of herb and five flavors of vajra, that part, just like that, is like, you know, it's really hard to understand what it is. But if you know what five ranks is, then you get, okay, it's actually talking about those five ranks. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you think about all those five ranks, and they look like different stages, but in the point, in the Precious Mirror Samadhi, it says five flavor from five from Vajra. So the poem is like reinforcing the idea that it's actually five, but it's one. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, I think they help each other in terms of our understanding. That's kind of my understanding.
Yeah. On this sheet we have the five ranks, and we have, for each one, we have a line from the Precious Mirror Samadhi that expresses an idea of the five ranks. Mm. So for me, it's kind of obvious that the five ranks is an expression of, the Mirror Samadhi is an expression of the five ranks. Well, that's a purpose, yeah, of it.
It does appear so, except that I don't know actually who came up with those lines. I'm not sure. I don't think Tozan came up with those lines, the correspondent lines.
Does that really matter?
Are you saying that because of those like corresponding lines are in the Precious Mirror Samadhi that, which is, I don't know which comes first, but are you saying that, like, one must have come?
One must have come after the other, but for all we know, the five ranks and the Prashnamira Samadhi are one and the same.
I think that's common understanding, and they're very inseparable. And
yeah, like somebody sat down and said, "I'm going to write a poem on the five ranks," or somebody said, "I wrote a poem." Hey, these are five ranks. does it matter?
I mean, these are probably both a work of not just one person. Probably, I'm guessing that they probably have been, improved and rewritten over the centuries. I don't even know that. But judging from, we don't really know much about Atola's life.
But does that matter?
Well, really doesn't. But it just tells us that probably, which lines actually represent which rank. This kind of thing also may vary depending on practitioners, maybe, I don't know. That's what I'm saying, I guess.
Well, I think it might matter if you view this poem as pointing at something, and if we knew a little bit about the circumstance that it came from, about the context that it came from, the cultural context, what was going on at the time, what these things are referring to, it may give us a hint as to what they're pointing at, or what he's pointing at in this poem. Which, would be helpful. I mean, there may be things today that we can relate to that, if we understood this poem, we could say, oh, well, that's like what's going on in Iraq at this point, or, some contemporary event that we might be able to relate this poem to it.
You might want to, I'm not capable of answering that question, but I think I pointed to some, the first page, kind of right in the middle, under the table, says Don Chan's five ranks, Ross Bolitar or something.
He just came out with the book.
Came out with the book. It just came out in like May, this year.
It's
called Don Chan's thing. Right. So Chogan actually recommended that book for me to read to prepare for this class. And it has a whole bunch of historical things really come, from Nagarjuna to Huyen to Sandokan, talking at length about Dharma too. So it kind of gives us, his title is The Five Ranks. So he's giving kind of historical background of how the five ranks came about. And if you're interested, that's the book you want to read. That's a new book. And what did Kuhn say about? He did say he liked the historical description in that book. So that means it was probably closer to Jogen's understanding. So that's that. Any final question, or I'm just going to next week, or actually going through Krishna Samadhi next week?